If you think about it, right? Good doctrine is meant to lead to devotion, right? Good theology is meant to hit our head, move to our hearts, go out to our hands to transform our habitat. And I get concerned sometimes that our groups do really good with the head and then can even do good with the heart, but then don't deploy the hands to transform the habitat. And so just as a Christian life, we would say the fullness of a Christian life is not head information and just moving the heart, but it's actually outward engagement too. I think that's the life of a group. You might have a group that meets every week, people feel cared for, but eventually what's gonna end up happening is if there's not outflow for that, they'll grow stagnant and they'll grow stale. And so I'm always thinking, how do I move my groups to deployment? Not because I want to send them out, or not because I want to disband the group, or not because I want to take everybody's favorite person away who tells the best jokes.
Right.
This is the Build Groups podcast, where we equip and resource group leaders and pastors in the local church to make disciples with one another together. My name is Adam Ehrlichman, your host. Here we go. Welcome to another episode of the Build Groups podcast. My name is Adam Ehrlichman, your host, and with us today, your co-host, Matt Moore. Man, we are excited for this episode. There's a good friend that I have. He is in Tennessee, just south of Nashville, and he is a groups pastor. And I'm going to let him talk a little bit about himself and share more about his ministry. We've known each other for years, Hunter Melton. And man, there's some great conversations that we have had through the years about ministry, and ones that I have thought through the years, it would be really valuable to capture some of those conversations that we've had for other people to hear them. And so, man, this is a guy, he just has a huge heart for ministry. He's extremely gifted. He's a great communicator. And I am very glad for you, those of you tuning in to listen today, to get to hear from him. But before we get to Hunter, Matt, how are you doing?
Man, I'm doing great. Excited about our guest today and learning from him and get some of these questions answered that we've got. It's a crazy time. It's February as we're recording this. And, you know, this is when we're identifying leaders and getting ready to, you know, train and equip new leaders to start new groups. So that's what I've been busy with and focused on. And just excited.
Yeah, man. I just had a lot of those conversations. I was just out at the small group network, the lobby conference in SoCal. It was raining, so I don't believe any of my SoCal friends that it's pretty out there anymore. but there's grace and forgiveness for brothers in the faith. We can keep fellowship. And that was a lot of the conversation out there with the breakouts and the sessions that were going on was, hey, how do you develop leaders and things of that nature? And yeah, man, this is the season. It's when's the best time to find new leaders? Every day, right?
Right now.
Right now. Yesterday, right now. So no, that's great. So let's get to our guest who's with us here today. Hunter, how are you doing today, man?
Hey, Adam and Matt, I'm so good. Man, thank you for having me. Adam, just so grateful for the friendship that we developed and the way that God brought us together and an awesome groups cohort over by, what was that, Grapevine Lake Louisville Lake or whatever. Yeah. And 11 guys getting together, talking groups. It's so cool. So grateful that we could bring that conversation online today.
Oh, man. So formative. I look back at that cohort that we had together with those other guys, and many of those guys are some of my best friends in ministry, and those formative relationships and the orthopractic conversations and the theological incredible that we got to have that experience together. And I'm thankful because now we get to have this with you right now, if it weren't for that. So, man, tell us a little bit about yourself, man. What's your background, your family? Man, tell audience a little bit about yourself.
Yeah. So my name is Hunter Melton and 33 years old, have been in ministry for just about a decade now. And so got into ministry originally doing young adult college ministry and then moved into the role that I'm in currently. I'm at Brentwood Baptist Church, which is, Adam said, just south of Nashville, but I'm actually in our Nashville campus called the Church at Avenue South. And so I have a wife. Her name is Joy. She's amazing. We've been married for almost 7 years. I've got a son named Judah, who's almost 4. And I've got a wonderful daughter named Addie, or Adelaide, is we just call her Addie. And I have to say, having a girl just hits different. I mean, I am so happy that she's becoming a daddy's girl. It's the best.
Man.
Nothing better. Yeah, it's amazing.
Well, I can't relate to y'all. I got 3 boys, and I'm blessed and plagued with all that at the same time. But I've got a little niece. That's where I kind of get my, the little princess fix, man. But
there you go.
Steal your heart. That's awesome, man. I love that. That's the cutest little name too. So it doesn't make me even an ounce more jealous. No, not at all. So let's talk a little bit about your ministry role, Hunter. Give us some context of, for our audience and our listeners tuning in, one of the things that's really helpful is to hear, what is your role? What do you do? And then also after that, we'll follow up with some metric questions just for you to give them context to let them properly apply those principles into their ministry, church size and context. So what do you oversee and what are you responsible for in your ministry role?
Yeah, so my official title is groups minister. We made a decision about 2 years ago to move away from discipleship minister as a title to groups minister. And primarily we did that because of the fact, I believe that all ministers are in discipleship. And so I just so happen to oversee groups. I also have kind of a secondary role giving leadership to college ministry in particular, but then also our young professional ministry. So we are a church in kind of the urban core of Nashville, which means we have a lot of college students. Some of you all might know that Nashville is called the Athens of the South because we have a full-scale replica of the Parthenon in Nashville, we also have a ton of universities, 100,000 college students in the middle of Nashville. It's wild, but it's great. And so, so I give leadership from basically our youngest college student all the way up to our oldest member when it comes to getting them into a biblical community. And so it's a fun puzzle to put together. I've had to learn that life doesn't happen in balance. It happens in rhythms, meaning that I can't just look at every day and try to balance all of my roles or I'll go crazy and I won't get anything done in any of them. But that I have to really look seasons and sprinting in those seasons for different ministries. So I oversee our what we call life groups, which are co-ed. The highest stated goal there is a biblical community, meaning that if they stopped that day and did not do a lesson, practice the one another's with maybe a couple that's hurting or is wounded, praying over them, serving them, then that's a win for our life group. Now we have another, and this is not my phrase, but we don't want to give people a menu. We want to give them a map. So once you feel like you need deeper, we have what we call Bible reading groups, which is almost kind of in the John Wesley style, where it's single gender. And the highest stated goal of that is biblical comprehension and accountability. So these are smaller groups of guys who get together and their only text is the Bible. This year in 2024, our church, under the leadership of our new senior pastor, we're preaching through the entire Bible in 2024. And then our Bible reading groups in particular are reading through the entire Bible in 2024. So Wednesday mornings, I'm getting in there. I'm reflecting with my guys what God taught me in my Bible reading this past week. And then we're also confessing sin. And so that's an important piece of that. And then finally, this is more of a dessert option. If a life group and Bible reading group are entrees, the dessert option for our group's ministry is mentor relationships. So this is one-on-one. And the highest stated goal of that is biblical wisdom for life through one-on-one communication. And so, we have a lot of people who want to get into a mentor relationship before they get into a life group or Bible reading group, and we discourage them from that. because it's hard to practice spiritual disciplines when it's one-on-one. It's hard to practice the one another's when it's one-on-one. It's honestly hard to use spiritual gifts, but we really do believe that you can do that in the context of a life group and a reading group. So that's my main, if you would call that a discipleship strategy, that's kind of where we're headed right now.
Yeah. So your life groups, are they about like 15 to 20, and then your Bible readings a little bit smaller than your one-on-one? And so co-ed, gender-based, and then one-on-one, I'm guessing, is probably gender-based too.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. So average size of a life group, you're exactly right, would be, you know, we want to keep that between 12, 15.
Okay.
Some groups are as high as, you know, or as many as, you know, 25. Our largest, probably our largest life group right now is our Empty Nesters life group. So it's a new demographic for us. We're a church plant of about 10 years ago. So as we've gotten older, our members have gotten older, and so some of them have moved into that life stage. But we try to keep it 12 to 15. Bible reading groups, you don't want any more than 7 or 6 in that. And of course, mentor relationship.
Okay. Well, cool. No, that gives that, yeah, that is a discipleship pathway for biblical community, go a little bit deeper and then go really deep. So yeah, no, there's some, yeah. I see that. I like that. I like that pathway that you guys have laid out and those options for the map.
There is a volunteer crisis in the church today. What are you doing about it? Build Groups Coaching and Consulting helps churches build a custom, discover, develop, and deploy new volunteers and leaders process to increase your volunteer base by 30 to 50% in 6 to 12 months. We do this with churches over and over again, all shapes and sizes, all across the country. To learn more about how we can change your ministry world, deepen your bench so that you never feel the pinch or pain of not having enough volunteers or leaders in your ministry again, go to buildgroups.net/consult.
So, man, give us even a little bit more context as we dive in. We're going to start talking more practically at the level, and Matt's going to ask some of those questions with you, the purpose of the group and what do they fulfill and some outcomes and all those good things. But man, for our audience to have a better framework, yeah. What type of, you know, you've kind of explained already type of groups, but how many total groups do you have that you're overseeing at that location, your campus? How many leaders, how many people in groups, what percentage of people are in group versus, you know, in your worship service on the weekend there?
Yeah, so we have, and I was just looking up these numbers for a report that we have to give to kind of our trustees. So accountability there, right?
Amen. Yeah.
Adam's all about that. Let's go track. we have about 34 groups, and that would include our life groups and our Bible reading groups. It doesn't include mentor relationships. So we have 34 groups. Life groups are mostly led, have a co-leader. So and then Bible reading groups would have just one leader per group. So we have in total of leaders within our ministry, we have about 50 people. We have 450 around. I'll give some weeks it's higher, some weeks it's lower, 450 people who attend the church at Avenue South on a Sunday. And then we have just over 300 who are in groups. And so I'm thinking that's 60 to 65, maybe getting close to 70, depending on the week. Because of college ministry or the effects of college, some weeks are a lot higher than that, and some weeks are lower than, but we just kind of know that ebb and flow there. So yeah, so we're kind of rocking right there around that 60 to 65%. Would love for that higher.
That's awesome. That's fantastic, man. You know, I think a lot of times people look at like that number and say, what's the percentage? And the important thing is that you realize what your percentage is. And you go, man, how are we going to grow that? And how are we going to improve that? Yeah. You know, there's different ministries you'll throw out. You should have X amount. Well, that's not necessarily the answer. The answer is, man, how are you growing your people and how are you investing in them? And so, man, that's fantastic. You know, are you doing multi-generational groups or stage of life groups? What does that look like?
primarily stage of life. And when I say that, I don't mean necessarily age of life.
Yeah.
That is distinctions important. So, one of the areas that we're growing really quickly right now is people who are single into their 30s, 30s, 40s, 50s. And so we're trying really hard to lock that down. So I mentioned earlier, we have an empty nesters group. And then we really break things down, honestly, by people telling me that this is what they want. We break it down for people who are married with kids, people who are married, and then we have young professional groups. So those kind of span the whole range of ages between really 22 to 30. And if you are single in that age, then we have a ton of different options that are there. And that's only because of the fact that we have people who kind of self-select into those groups. Mm-hmm. I really was, it's interesting. I don't know what people would say about this. And maybe this is another lived experience of other groups ministers, but I really wanted for our young married couples and our young single people to be in groups together. That was really my heart when I started out. And I kind of thought, man, we can learn from one another. People can see that. And what I began to see was that people were still, even within those groups, were self-selecting into pockets of people who were in the same stage of life as them.
Yeah.
We compensate by if that is a siloed aspect of things, right? If you were to think of that as far as stage of life is, we compensate with that by doing a lot of panel discussions. So it could be a single young adult who says, man, I want to know how to grow my faith. Well, we bring in people who are older to speak into that. Our mentor relationship ministry is where a lot of intergenerational ministry is done. But that's kind of where things are there. We break it down primarily by life stage.
Man, I love the intentionality of like everything you're talking about, just the intentionality and the focus of investing in people. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
So if I'm new to your church and we meet and I go, man, why should I join a group? What's the purpose of them?
Yeah.
Like what's your elevator speech, man? What do you communicate to them?
Yeah. Here's what I would say. And I've said this from the platform. If you were to be, on a desert island all by yourself, much of the Bible would not be applicable to you. And most people live the Christian life as if they are on a functional deserted island when it comes to who they're allowing their life, who they're allowing to speak into their lives. And here's what I mean by that. It is impossible to fulfill the Christian life living on your own or living with just people kind of halfway around you. Too many times come into our worship services and treat it as almost their own personal YouTube worship set. They just happen to be in the room. Groups brings the Christian experience into the tangible. Groups makes what we hear on Sunday morning applicable. Groups is where we live out what we learn. Our pastor planted the church, and I got here 3 years after he planted. 1/168 is a sign that hangs on the walls of our church. And that's just, you have 1 hour on Sunday morning and there are 168 hours in the week. Like, what are you doing with that?
That is
and
so good.
So the
full, that is so good. That, man, yeah. I love that. I want that sign in my house.
We used to print stickers of them and people would take them and put them on, their laptops, and their water bottles and everything. But if someone were to come in to say, I've tried groups before, why should I do this? It's been an underwhelming experience. I would say that if you've been to one group, you have been to one group, meaning this, that every group is a blank slate when it comes to opportunity, when it comes to people who can pour into you, when it comes to the Bible that you get to receive. There's just no replacing the communal nature of this life that we're living in Christ. We are the people of God before we are the person of God. And so groups is the vehicle through which we get to experience that.
It's amazing. That's awesome.
How do you train small group leaders and teachers? Group Leader Training, a biblical manual for small group leaders and teachers in the local church, is a holistic 5-session training based on Acts 2, 42-47 that trains group leaders to deepen community, encourage growth, mobilize group members to service and sharing of their faith with unbelievers. Course videos, belief assessments, and more resources are provided online with special access through the workbook. 50% off bulk orders is available exclusively on our website. To learn more, go to buildgroups.net/coming soon.
Man, I was on your website, and again, intentionality. I just hear intentionality in everything you guys are doing. And I can see you have an intentionality. You guys want to plant churches.
Yeah.
And so as a groups minister myself, and one of our roles is to multiply groups. How has that impacted your ability and even your messaging in planting groups?
Well, we, and again, I don't think anybody who's listening to this probably has an affinity for groups. And so I don't want to say something that as if it's original to me when we all know it's not, but
oh, just fool us, man. We never, go ahead.
That's right. Yeah. Take it and tweet it
wow,
out.
Listen, fool us. Let's go.
We never want to be a church that just has groups, right? But we want to be a church of groups. And I think planting churches, so we have 9 regional campuses. Every campus has its own live campus and teaching pastor. Every campus is preaching from the same text. But the way that we have gotten there and the way that we have done that well, because every campus is really thriving, is we look for the pockets of people and we go to them. Hmm. And go to them through the vehicle of groups. So we almost have to have a certain threshold of groups started before we would even consider hiring a campus pastor. And so what that has done is that has put the group's vehicle front and center for how do you engage the community? How do you do evangelism? How do you love one another, even in the context of kind of ministry in the wild, right? So you might be 2 or 3 communities away, but you know you're meeting with people whose heartbeat is the same. Our mission strategy or our vision is to engage the whole person with the whole gospel of Jesus Christ anywhere, anytime, with anybody. And we see that groups are a key part of that. And our groups are a key part of moving that ball forward.
Awesome. Awesome. So what are the outcome? You talk about the whole person, like what's like the man, discipleship next step for people in groups that you're going, man, this is what we want to help people take a next step into.
Well, I think we see our groups as training grounds for future, not only future groups, but future leaders in the church. And so if someone was to come and they had never been in a group before, what we would hope they would experience within the context of that group is care. And equipping, right? That they would receive care, but then they would be equipped. And so we do that by giving gospel conversation training to each and every single one of our groups every year. And so every year we will either go to the groups or we'll host that at the church, and we require our groups to be a part of that. And so what we're hoping is that the next generation of our leaders in our church comes out of the hub of our groups, because they've been equipped within the group with knowing their spiritual discipline or their spiritual groups. They have experienced what it means to be a part of a healthy church through groups. And then they're deployed ultimately to either serve as a group leader themselves or to realize, man, God has gifted me with areas to serve within the church, but also as far away on the mission field as they could go. And we want to see groups as the hub.
Awesome. Awesome.
Man, the thing
Adam, you're up.
Yeah, man. Yeah. You could tell I was ready to say something. Like you just saw, I was kind of antsy in my seat over here. So thanks for the lob, and I'll just smash it out of the park now. When's baseball season? Is it back yet?
Yes.
nice.
It's coming.
It's coming. Yeah. The thing that I love that you said there, Hunter, was with the outcomes you hope to see out of group leaders and, well, not group leaders, but people being a part of a group, like, hey, what do you hope they do more of? What do you want to see come about as a result? I love just even, and you'd probably even notice it because your mentality is so woven in with the philosophy of what you guys have with church planting, that like group doesn't exist to just kind of terminate on group, right? Like,
right.
You have this vision for people that group leader who's a banker, who, you know, I don't know, maybe they cut hair, or maybe they trade stocks, you know, in the market, or, you know, whatever occupation is that they're doing, doctor, lawyer. You're like, well, maybe they're going to be a missionary. Right. So you're like, well, when they join a group, we hope that they, you know, they get mobilized, activated to use their gifts to serve. And man, that might be in Afghanistan. Right. Like,
that's right. That's right.
Like the vision you have for that. I just think that it was so subtle when you said it. I just have to bring attention to it because that's such a huge mentality for the possibilities of just right. A royal priesthood of believers, of them being activated to go and minister and to do gospel ministry in ways the Holy Spirit could empower them, that I think most churches don't even consider that someone could.
Yeah, well, and Adam, I mean, if you think about it, right, good doctrine is meant to lead to devotion, right? Good theology is meant to hit our head, move to our hearts, go out to our hands to transform our habitat. And I get concerned sometimes that our groups do really good with the head and then can even do good with the heart, but then don't deploy the hands to transform the habitat. And so just as a Christian life, we would say the fullness of a Christian life is not head information and just moving the heart, but it's actually outward engagement too. I think that's the life of a group. You might have a group that meets every week, people feel cared for, but eventually what's going to end up happening is if there's not outflow for that, they'll grow stagnant and they'll grow stale. And so I'm always thinking, how do I move my groups to deployment? Not because I want to send them out, or not because I want to disband the group, or not because I want to take everybody's favorite person away who tells the best jokes.
Right.
Right.
You took my friend. You took because my friend.
Right. Haven't we all heard that before? Like, no, what are you talking about? We're just getting good. And I want to say, we're just clicking. Come on, Pastor. And I want to say, man, groups don't, like you said, Adam, groups don't terminate on themselves. That's what every group does that eventually ends up folding. Groups that send out and groups that say, man, we see this in you, you go and do this, or man, we're going to serve together, or we're going to call out and we're going to all as a group go and serve in the children's ministry every third Sunday. Those are the groups that I think are finally getting it to where the head and the heart are transformed because they're ready to go and utilize their spiritual gifts to serve. That's what I would hope to see. And that people would say their spiritual life came alive in the context of group, not just that they have better friends.
Yes, that they don't just sit and study, but they get up in their service and sharing of their faith. Like that's, yes. Yeah.
Where do you find new volunteers and leaders? Build Groups offers a one-time, two-hour Discover exercise virtually or in person with your church staff and team and help you build a long list of potential new volunteers and leaders you can invite and onboard into a training process to deploy them into the specific ministry area that they are called to. We've helped churches build a list of nearly 400 names. If you would like to do the same and not feel the pinch and pains of volunteer holes every week, go to buildgroups.net/CI, select Discover Exercise, submit the form, and we'll fill your ministry bench.
Man, well, so like, I want to zoom in a little bit more. We've been kind of very broad and very zoomed out and looking at just a lot of, hey, big purpose, and what do you oversee, and what do you want, you know, globally to happen. I want to zoom in, man, on you. So as a group's pastor, minister, what does your personal involvement in belonging to a group in a church look like? Because a lot of times, right, we can get so busy doing groups that we just are kind of the conduit of helping group happen for everyone else to build biblical community. And we go, oh, wait, am I even like experiencing biblical community myself as the one primarily helping facilitate that? So, I mean, for you, what does belonging to a group in your church and building that biblical community look like?
Yeah, I just have a conviction that I need to be leading one. And so I do. I lead a Bible reading group on Wednesday mornings. And then my wife and I are in a life group together. So we stopped leading a life group when we had our kid. And so on Wednesday mornings, I lead a group of guys, about eight guys get together. And then on Sunday nights, I'm being poured into by my life group leaders, which is kind of an interesting spot for me to be in. But it's really important that I can sit beside my wife and hear her heart and not feel like I have to shoehorn the situation, but I can just receive. It's taken work, but I'm there.
Man, that's good. Okay. So I got two quick hitter questions for you. Let me see here. Make sure I ask the right one. Everyone's got strengths and weaknesses in their church, right? Everyone's got, hey, we love that we're doing this. We want to do that maybe a little bit better. Hey, that, I wish we weren't doing that. Or man, I wish this wasn't a reality. I wish that wasn't a problem. That might even be an Achilles heel for and so, man, you know, quick hitter question, 60 seconds or less. What is one thing that you would like to strengthen and one thing that you would like to, you know, kind of go from feeling like, man, we're not the best at that, but we'd like to get better at that.
I would love to increase our biblical literacy. And so, you know, we're doing that. Our groups do a really good job of caring for one another. And they use the Bible in that. And we are starting to see people treasure and love God's word as our church has gone through the whole Bible this year. And what that's revealed is that we need to do a better job in general of giving people biblical literacy and comprehension, just from the stage, from the platform, and in our groups. Because people are reading Genesis for the first time, and all of a sudden, it's not felt board Noah's Ark anymore. It's, you know, it's Tamar and Dinah and all of these stories, and people are like, whoa, let's talk through this. And we're seeing our groups do that. But it's revealed to me that our people need to know more of the Bible in order to understand, right? You can't worship a God you don't know. And so the care piece is important, the deploy piece is important, but we want to do biblical literacy really well.
Man, I love that. That's good. That is really good. So,
that's another episode, Adam. We need to have that as another episode. Just
that is another episode. That's another one. That's really good. I now I have a personal conviction that I'm not going to flesh out in this podcast right now.
So we've titled this the Build Groups podcast. That's what it's entitled. What's one way you'd encourage churches and church leaders to build groups in their local church?
Yeah. Realize that what happens on Sunday morning is so important, but it is not the apex of the life of a Christian. That is one element of what it means to be a believer, and the living out of that in the group's ministry, right? Meaning that what happens on Wednesday night can be just as transformative as what happens on Sunday morning. And those two things go together. So put money, time, and people resources into your group's ministry. And group's ministers, don't be afraid to advocate for that because your people are needing more than ever. I think of the great high priestly prayer where Jesus prayed, Lord, I pray for those who will believe in you by the words of the apostles that they may be one. Just as you and I are one, so that the world might know that you have sent. John 17:20. Your groups are not only building up the members of your church, but your groups also can be an evangelism strategy to reach the community. Train your group leaders, get into the lives of your group's leaders, care for them, and build them up, because they will be, I think we all saw it with COVID, our groups were the vehicle and the lifeblood of our church. And so keep investing in them like it's 2020.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. I like the way you said that they go together.
Yeah.
They're not competing against each other. Like the Sunday morning is fueling that growth in the life of your groups, and the groups are feeling what people are getting out of Sunday morning because they're being encouraged by their brothers and sisters to be in the life of the church. So
yeah,
it's great, man. And then one last thing, man, we love to end on testimonies, man, and stories that have taken place in your group. So like, what's just one group story that you can share with us from your groups?
We have a local partner called Siloam Healthcare. They do 100% of the refugee healthcare. So any refugee that comes into the state of Tennessee, they are funneled to Siloam for initial onboarding and healthcare. And Siloam reached out to us and said, we have a couple of families from Afghanistan who need your need a group of people to walk alongside of them and basically to teach them how to live in America. So we had two groups who adopted two families from Afghanistan. For a whole year, this group taught them what it meant to walk on sidewalks and to cross on crosswalks and to go to a pharmacy and not to take your kids to the emergency room every time something bad happens, but you can go to a doctor. But what eventually began to happen was that family, they're very Muslim, began to soften and began to open up this family to the point where they gave them money. This group gave this family money to get a new apartment. So eventually they started coming to our church.
Wow.
And we saw this family coming into a church. They wouldn't at first eat any meat that was given. They wouldn't, because it needs to be halal meat, kind of blessed by in the Muslim tradition. But what we began to see was that they would break bread and have meals together. Those barriers were broken down. Eventually, one of the children, and in the still process because of the cultural Muslim culture there, but began to ask questions about Jesus. And it's all because one of our groups partnered with them for the long haul. And I treasure that story. And that family is still around, and we're grateful.
That's beautiful. Beautiful. Thanks for sharing that. That's awesome.
That's incredible. I mean, that's exactly buttresses the point you made, that groups can be the primary vehicle of evangelism, because it's so much easier to do witnessing and evangelism when you're together. There's few things that I would try to do alone, but if I had some of my comrades and my buds and my friends trusted with me, it's like, yeah, well, let's go. Absolutely. And so that is such an amazing example. I mean, like crossing faith lines and barriers there that most churches don't have a story like that, where they are getting to even intersect to have conversations or meals with those across the lines of faith barriers, right? Wow. So everything we talk about in this podcast, right? There's a lot of strategy, there's a lot of structure, there's system, there's metrics, and all of that we discuss because it ultimately is going to lead to what Hunter just shared, that story. And that's why we do it. And that's why we actually ask the questions and the progress and the progression that we do, so that you know, hey, when we finish and we end this, it's all about that story of life transformation. And that's what we're about here on the Builders podcast. So, man, that's all that we have time for today. Thank you, those of you tuning in, listening for this episode. This was a good one, very, very good one. Thank you, Hunter, for joining us and sharing and answering our questions.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me. It's an honor, and just so proud of what y'all are doing in helping our churches to see the beauty of groups in the life of a church. Grateful.
Thanks, man.
Thanks, guys. My name's Adam Ehrlichman, your host. Matt Moore, your co-host. This is the Build Groups Podcast, signing off.